Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. It's a Chevy Power Play. Now get over $8,600 total savings on a 2018 Chevy Silverado 1500 Crew Cab LT, plus an additional $2,500 in competitive owner cash. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and score. It wasn't pretty, but it was a come-from-behind win for the Cubs in Atlanta. It came at a price. Yu Darvish returned for the DL, then left with a leg cramp. So where's the panic meter now? 55 losses, only good enough to get the Bulls the seventh pick in the draft. Ping pong balls did not bounce in Chicago's favor last night, so was all the losing worth it? And should management be trusted to find their next star at number 7? And Bears OTA is underway and everybody having fun. So much fun. But amidst the fun, how long will it take Mitchell Trubisky to pick up a brand new offense? And will Kyle Long be 100% healthy for training camp? And welcome in to Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. I hope you had a really good day. I'm David Kaplan. Panel for today's show, he is Patrick Finley, Chicago Sun-Times, David Haugh, the lead columnist, Chicago Tribune, catch him on the score, and Hub Arkish, he is the guru of Pro Football Weekly. You hear him on the score as well. Cubs rallied in the ninth last night, got a very important win over the Braves to start the road trip off. I thought that at-bat for Addison Russell to tie the game was the biggest at-bat for him so far through 8 weeks of baseball.
I think you're right this year because he needed that. He's starting to show some signs of life after kind of a sluggish start. And Zobrist again with the clutch hit. That was what the Cubs needed on a night where it could have been a lot worse coming out of it. It was bad enough to see the disappointment with the dart and the sort of the mystery surrounding the Darvish situation. To get out of there with a victory was the best possible way because it sort of changed the subject.
It really did. I thought it was great. I will tell you, there's times when I'd rather be lucky than good. I thought that he was safe at home. I thought he was safe at third.
I think you're right.
You know, you look at both replays, they didn't get overturned because it wasn't inconclusive, but even looking at the replays. But, hey, you get some of those breaks sometimes.
They got every break went their way. Throw in the right field, gets the first run. The play at the plate, from what we heard after the game, was they couldn't tell if he grazed his helmet.
Right.
So they said we don't have enough to overturn. And then they used the review, so they couldn't review the play at third.
I thought there was two things. Big hit for Addison Russell, no question about it. I'm a little disturbed at this point by Javi Baez's nonchalance. I mean, that throw in the left field on that double play, that can't happen.
Agreed.
Not if you're an all-star, which is what we're trying to make him out to be right now. Was it his ninth error this season? We're, you know, early May. And I love the kid, but that stuff's got to stop.
And I love your point about Russell. You know, sometimes entire seasons can swing with an at-bat. And you saw him be passionate once he got the hit. You can kind of see him start to relax a little bit the last week or two. And if this, I mean, he's never going to be a 300 hitter. He's probably never going to be a 280 hitter. But you need to get some power out of him.
I think he's almost, you say he's relaxed. I almost think he's locked in. It's almost like Cap, and I did the numbers as of like last Sunday. But since the Manny Machado talk has sort of percolated, he really has. You look at his numbers and his power numbers and average, he's really responded to whatever the buzz has been. It may be coincidental, but it probably isn't.
And he's still 24, and I think he can be a 280 hitter. I don't think he's a 320 hitter, but I think he can be 280 and get you 100 ribbies. He had 95 2 years ago. David, you're absolutely right. Manny Machado, here comes Addie Russell. There seems to be a connection between the two.
It'll be fun to watch the Cubs when Baez and him are both locked in at the same time, because it seems like Baez seemed to ebb a little bit as he came on the last week or two.
All right, let's talk about Yu Darvish, because he's been a guy that has not had real heavy biting action on his slider. His changeup has been spotty. His splitty, as you see right there, last night was filthy. And David DeJesus is sitting with me, he goes, where's that guy been? That pitch was unhittable. And he's sitting at 95, 96 comfortably. He only went four innings. They said he had a calf cramp, and Joe Maddon made the decision to pull him. But at least you saw the guy that you paid for.
You're right. I was watching
this. There's still questions.
There's still questions, Cap, because of durability, the fifth inning issue. I was watching this at the NBA draft lottery on my screen, and he looked like Yu Darvish is supposed to look.
Correct.
And the swing and misses and just the command that you hadn't seen, it was a shame that the dehydration, cramps, or whatever, there's always something. And I think once he gets past whatever this is, I think you're going to see the pitcher you're expecting.
Well, and David, I think you wrote this, 10 days ago, 11 days ago. The Cubs did him no favors by deciding to pull a Los Angeles Dodgers and, you know, send him away for 10 days with the flu. You know, even if it was something that bothered him, he's got this label already that everything needs to be 100% for him to be good. And I think the team worked against him, at least in that one regard. To see him come back and look good, you know, maybe Joe Maddon looks a little smarter today, but still, they did him no favors.
Well, and the other good news is that if he, in fact, did have the flu, the dehydration and cramps go together. I'm sure they were overloading him on fluids. They probably cut him back to get him out there on the mound. It would make sense. Rather, if they said pulled calf muscle, I'd be freaked because I've done that, and I'm not comparing myself to you, Darvish. That can be months, okay? If it's just a little cramping, then it doesn't bother me.
By the way, our Ankin Law Sports Talk Live poll question, NBCSportsChicago.com/vote. Where's your panic level now on you, Darvish, after you watch four really solid innings last night with one run and velocity sitting comfortably 95, 96 right now? One.
Does that mean not much panic?
Not much panic.
Okay,
so five is total freakout.
All right. I still think people will feel better once he gets past the fifth inning.
Agreed.
So it's not a mental thing. It's talked about now. It's even, you know, Maddon, you know, addresses it. It's something that's there. You need to get past that.
Yep. And I think even more than the velocity, that one splitter you showed, that hasn't been there.
That's exactly.
The first time we've seen that, you know. And that's something, even if you're off velocity a little bit, you can control.
And he threw two sliders. Yeah. He struck out, I think it was Ozzie Albies and Freddie Freeman, that looked like Jake Arrieta. They both almost hit those guys
in
the back.
And those are two very good hitters.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And we went, where's that guy been? Because we haven't seen that. We have not. We've seen velocity with no movement.
Well, and it'd be something if he was, I don't want to say fixed, but improved, because you're going to have this guy for a long time, and you need to figure out, okay, how do we get him straightened out when he comes off? And if you can learn that lesson now before the summer of his first year with you, I think that that'll serve
and
you
maybe,
going forward.
You know, maybe the 10 days off was what it took, mentally more than physically. I don't buy the entire, you know, he was so weak, we had to put him, they could have skipped a day, 2 days. Mm-hmm. Mentally, it probably was a bigger problem, and maybe he's refreshed now.
I do think he was sick, though, because it happened really suddenly. I mean, you know, he was pitching, and then 6 hours later, he was going on the whatever,
yeah,
7 day, 10
told us on the radio that he was very sick in the clubhouse.
But then when Maddon explains it away, he's sitting there going, well, the Dodgers manipulated the DL all last year. What's this? Like, he's the one who put them kind of in that same category.
He might have been very ill. Maybe we're not being fair at all. He was playing catch in the outfield on the day that they put him on the disabled list.
No question. And he was, you know, joking around in the locker room with guys.
So
the optics were not good.
It was bad optics. Last night were very good optics.
Joe Knowles called and said they're going to give you 2 weeks off or 10 days before your next column. Maybe it'll
help. A little dissatisfied lately. That fourth paragraph is a killer.
It is.
You got to get through the fifth.
I know.
I just can't get there. It's like a mental thing.
All right. Let's talk about the draft lottery. David was there last night. Of course, Mark Schanowski and our team were there covering it last night. And the Bulls were hoping that for the second time being in the lottery, that they would get the ping pong balls to bounce their way like they did when they got Derrick Rose. Unfortunately, no such luck. They go backwards a spot this time. Instead of picking sixth, which is where they were slotted, they will pick seventh for the second consecutive year. Last year, of course, acquiring Minnesota's pick in the Jimmy Butler trade. So I know Michael Reinsdorf, his face told it all. He was disappointed. They were hoping to hit the home run and get DeAndre Ayton or Marvin Bagley or Luka Doncic. But now they're going to have to do a good job scouting. Hub, this is where scouting has got to be all. You got to find a way to find the best player on the board.
Last year, in the seventh spot, they got a kid who we thought was a Rookie of the Year candidate until his back went haywire on him. You can find that talent. I mean, if you look at the history of these lotto picks, more don't work than do work. So it's exactly to your point. Do your homework. Do your job. You can find a very special player there. It can be tougher than if you go 1, 2, 3, but the answer to that is I guess they should have stunk worse.
Maybe, but you tell that to people in Memphis. I mean, Memphis, they were 22 victories. The Suns were only one game worse. They dropped out of the top three. I mean, that's a very difficult. When you rely on luck and chance to build your franchise, you're going to run into nights like last night.
Correct.
You've got to be better than that.
You've got to have a better process.
You do. And so, look, I understand, you know, the numbers and the evidence supports the top three players are going to be the franchise-changing players. you're not in a position to draft one of those guys. You were only had an 18% chance of being one of those teams. What do you do in life that you know, there's an 18% chance of this happening and you're going all in? That's a huge gamble.
Big game,
so
right.
You've got to do other things. Well, as you point out, the scouting, prepare, and you can get a good player there.
By the way, here's our poll question. Now we'll move from Cubs to Bulls with it. Should the Bulls have lost more? NBCSportsChicago.com/vote.
That's all Nico Mirotic, it's all his fault, right? That they,
they won.
He got too hot.
In December.
I don't understand fans who are disappointed today. Like you said, there's an 18% chance that you're in the top three. They fell, but they fell one spot. This is exactly more or less what we thought we were getting. And for people to be disappointed that the 1-in-5 shot didn't come through,
here's what they're disappointed by, Patrick. Right. A year ago on draft night, and I'm not speaking for myself. I'm trying to speak of what I understand from the feedback that we've gotten. When they traded Jimmy Butler, there was an understanding that they were going to bottom out.
And when they were 3-20, everyone went, yes.
This makes
sense. We argued on this set.
Exactly. This makes sense to me. We're 3-20. We're going to get one of those three transcendent players. And then they got respectable. Right. And then they matured faster than people thought. And John Paxson's talking about, hey, we don't know. We're surprised as anybody that some of these guys have matured this quickly. I argued that that was a good thing. Mm-hmm. I understood the argument why people thought it was a bad thing. This is the result of that. It's not a terrible situation to be in. You could get a player like Mikal Bridges and be very happy with this year's draft.
Michael Porter, if you want another back injury guy.
That would worry me, but you're right. That's that kind of guy.
Or there's another way to look at it. Maybe one of those top three teams wants 7 and Zach LaVine, or 7-22 and Chris Dunn or something, and you get one of those
three
picks.
That's hard to do.
That's a lot. Okay, but you're right. That's a lot.
It's hard to do.
What if the phone rang? Phone rings, you're John Paxson. Hello? Yeah, it's Greg Popovich. Look, I cannot get Kawhi to come back here. He wants out. He's 26. He'll be 27 before the season starts. He says, you give me 7 and Markkanen, and you can have Kawhi Leonard. Are you doing it?
I don't think they would do that. I think the Spurs would want more, but yes,
okay,
I would.
Okay, 7, 22, and Markkanen.
I would really strongly consider that. Yeah, I don't think that's a deal that they're going to
make. Yeah, I would not do that.
I'd be very – well, you said 7, 22, and Markkanen. I don't think the Bulls would be inclined to do that deal.
Yeah, well, if the question about Kawhi is, does he need to be in a bigger market so he can get the better shoe deal? You hear all these stories. If you can get him to kind of wink and nod and say, yeah, I'll re-sign once you get here, I would give them everything that's not attached to the United Center floor for him. You're not going to win unless you have one of the best 10 players in basketball. And provided you think he's healthy, which is a giant proviso.
That's a pretty big jump, Patrick.
If you think he's healthy and if he'll stay, I'll give you all 15 guys off my roster.
Well, but even if he's healthy, he's got to take the supermax, and you got to be willing to give it up, because without that, you cannot give up those kind of assets for a guy who just forced his way out of San Antonio.
I don't think that's realistic. So I think if you focus on things that are, you got 7, you got 22, and you're going to get you're going to get one really good player and one probably guy that's going to be part of your rotation. What the Bulls do from there, I don't know. I mean, I think that how good do you think Lauri Markkanen is? I wrote today, I said, last year's draft, everyone's worried about not getting in the top three. Last year's example, Lonzo Ball went 2nd. Markkanen went 7th. Which player would you rather have long term?
Markkanen.
Okay. So
Donovan Mitchell's probably rookie of the year. Right. He went 13th.
Markel Fultz went 1st.
I almost hate making points by using the exceptions rather than the rule. I think those kind of are the exceptions. But I think when you're in the Bulls' position, you can't look at it any other way. I mean, you have to do this. You have to find the examples that, you can get good players at 7. And it doesn't mean that you're going to guarantee anything when you get in 3rd. This is a draft. It's a projection. Last night was a projection of the projection. It was sort of a silly thing to cover.
You can get Jimmy Butler at 22 or 20. What was it, 26?
30, I think. 30.
Yeah. It goes back to where you came in, Dave. I mean, do your homework. Donovan Mitchell's a great example. I'd love to have him right now. He did really good. I don't think, listen, you didn't accomplish your purpose. You didn't get the number one overall pick. But that was intentional. You weren't bad enough. And I sat here all year long saying, and good for you, because nobody should go out there and try and lose. So now you're dealing with the reality of this is how good you are. You've got a couple kids that maybe you can start to build around and go get another
David
one.
David Arkish right next to you. He believes right with you.
Guys, we're on the same page in that.
We've had this conversation. Yeah. You know what people are paying for those tickets.
I feel
you cannot charge them that money.
I just
try
feel
and lose.
Kind of bad.
Your competition's doing it.
Well, I don't care about that. I wonder about the people who pay that money for those tickets when they know a team is doing that, but that's the only way you hang out of your seats.
I just can't get past the whole Memphis example. Right. I mean, they were 22-60, Cap.
Right.
And the whole rhetoric in Memphis, I'm sure, I'm not plugged into Memphis talk radio or TV, but I'm sure it was like, lose, lose, lose. Oh, we won? Oh, darn. They were the second worst team in the league, and they dropped out of the top three because of a ping pong ball. Okay, that's the when you roll the dice, it's like trying to make your house payment by going to the casino.
Which also can't happen again after this year. I think next year they're going to the top three. Well, I guess it could happen, but at least the odds stay the same now. I think next year they go to the top three teams all have the same number of chances for that first
Correct.
Pick.
Yeah, but you know, if there's any good news here, it's if you take somebody at seven and if he doesn't help you right away, you're probably going to pick seventh again next year. And maybe that's not a bad thing because they're not going to open up the bank vault until what? Not this offseason, but next
offseason. Here's the other question. In the last year, they made the Jimmy Butler trade, which we all agree was probably a really good trade. They drafted Markkanen, probably a pretty good pick. They found David Nwaba on the Lakers, didn't get a deal signed. They got him here. Nice rotation piece, not a great player. It looks like they've gotten those moves right so far. So do you trust Garn Pax to make this pick?
There's a lot of cynicism surrounding that question because people here are conditioned not to.
Correct.
But I think that you've got to. I give them the benefit of the doubt in this case because I feel like
I do.
Since they hit the reset button, they have made some very smart decisions.
Correct.
And I think it's unusual, sort of like the White Sox. Rick Hahn got a sort of a new lease on life when they, and on his job at least, when they started over. I look at the Bulls much the same way, and they've been very intelligent since they did that.
The one thing that's nagging at me a little bit, and I don't think you can really use it as a decision point because of the injury, I was hoping for more from Zach LaVine the second half of the season. Now, he's coming off that ACL.
Some huge deal.
He was the centerpiece of that deal, if you think about it. Getting the seventh pick was nice, too. And I was a little disappointed in what you saw from him the second half.
My answer is, do you trust him to make the right pick at seven? Yeah. Do you know why? He did it last year. I mean, last year is the best evidence of, Markkanen's as promising of a number seven pick as there's been in what? This decade, probably?
This is a good, Steph Curry went seventh, too. I mean, he was pretty
good. Klay Thompson went 11th.
So this is a pretty good draft, though. This is a pretty deep draft.
You look at that Golden State team. Curry, 7. Thompson, 11. Draymond Green in the second round. I mean, they were able to build a special team.
That's why I've been screaming about anti-tanking all season long. Yeah. You don't need to do it. It doesn't make
players
sense.
Players that fit a system, players that buy into a system, a coach that gets the best out of those players. That's what the Bulls are trying to do. They're not trying to be Golden State. I mean, nobody's going to be Golden State. But you look around the league and you have evidence of trusting a coach, trusting a system, and players that fit in that system. Boston, Golden State, and more.
Speaking of the Celtics, Boston Celtics were winners again last night to go up 2-0 on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Cavs started strong. LeBron James, 21 first quarter points. But I thought Cleveland guys ran out of gas. And that Celtics team, despite missing their two best players, boy, are they loaded.
They're loaded. They are smart with the ball. It's sort of like the NBA. We were talking last night in the press room. It's sort of like the NBA example of Loyola. This is a very well-coached team. They spread the floor. They know what to do. The Cavs look beaten. The Cavs look lost if LeBron's not doing everything. The Cavs look like you expect that they stereotypically are supposed to look. It's a bad situation for Cleveland.
LeBron had 42, 10 and 8, something like that yesterday?
Yeah, triple-double.
That's 42, 10. I mean, what else can he do here? I mean, this was the game that was set up for them to win. If they can't win this game when Their shooting percentage is good. They get off to a big lead on the road. LeBron does this. I mean, what hope do we have for the Cavs?
You know, I didn't mind that he left Cleveland the last time. I minded the way he did it. If they lose this series, I don't know how you can make an argument that he should stay in Cleveland. I don't know what the point is. Now, they've got the eighth pick. They're right behind the Bulls. And maybe they're a little healthier, but I would not blame the guy.
He has a front office that failed him this year.
Wait, hold on a second. I got to call you out there. Because a lot of the moves that they made were moves that he's
the assistant general manager.
Hey, let's pay Tristan Thompson. That guy sucks. Yeah. I mean, Tristan Thompson is awful.
He just happens to have the same agent as LeBron James, though.
Right. Yep. So he gets him a max deal. He forces guys out. From what I've heard, Derek and he were not on the same page the whole year, and it was not Derek's fault. I hear LeBron's not the easiest guy in the world to play with.
I wasn't really defending LeBron. I was just making the point, why stay, you know? And give Tristan Thompson a break. He's a little distracted, you know?
Exactly. Just a little. But anyway, the Celtics have gone up 2-0 on the Cavs. And that Celtics team, wow, are they going to be something next year with their guys.
When they get both guys back, they'll probably incorporate them really well into that system.
All right, it's the era of good feelings at Halas Hall. Matt Nagy's first full squad OTA is underway. But how long will it take everybody to get on the same page with the new head coach's offense?
Crank up the heat and turn on STL. On NBC Sports Chicago, host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table in a half hour on the topics that are trending with our teams.
We got the most mismanaged basketball team in the history of the world. Which franchise made the gutsiest draft day move? I think Pack wanted to do this, and he finally got his way.
Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
It's fun. It's happy. I mean, everyone out here has smiles on their face. Everyone's running around having a good time. The defense is talking trash to the offense. The offense is coming, trying to give them comebacks. But it's fun. And that's what we wanted from this team, is to come out here and have fun, play hard, forget about mistakes. We don't care about those right now. We'll fix those later. Try to eliminate them and minimize them as much as you can. But so far, this is only day two of phase three OTAs, but I'm really happy with where we're at.
We're all learning together, and we're having fun out there, you know, and that's the thing about us, you know. We want to keep having fun, but we want to be willing to learn, and that's where our defense is at right now.
If I was a receiver, I would love to play in this offense, just because you get to do so many different things, and you get so many different plays, and it just looks fun over there.
It's all about fun now up at Halas Hall. Hub, what's your takeaway? This is, I think he said, phase three as they install.
No, day two is day two of phase three.
Day two of phase three.
Well, you know, I was standing right to the left there during that conversation. What I kept thinking is that this guy is really hard not to like. I mean, there's something about Nagy, and maybe it's just the juxtaposition of Foxy. John was a good guy. I didn't dislike John Fox. He was just hard to work with, okay? This guy, not only is he a good quote, he's easy to work with, but he just... there's something about him. He exudes a certain niceness about him.
He's undefeated too, which helps.
He's undefeated. That's true. But there's a sincerity there that isn't fake. Mm-hmm. And I think that you can read a lot about people by the way they treat people. And I think since day one, he has treated people with respect. And he's himself. It's authentic. It's not forced. It's not guarded.
Here's Danny Trevathan today about his new head coach.
He's a cool coach, man, and it makes you want to work harder for him. He's always giving us little details, smiling, but we know that he's a hard worker just like we are. You know, he's up there working just like we are. So, you know, and he's always put in the right position. He take care of us. So, you know, on the back end where I come from, you take care of coaches like that. You go out there and make plays, and you win games for the coaches. And I like the way he came in. Came in humble, but he was hungry, man. And he came in anxious, moving around in the meetings. You know, I like that. And that get me fired up. So I feel like we got a good leader up there, a head coach.
I think the leadership thing's important, because this is a guy who's called plays for, what, 6 games in his career. Mm-hmm. This guy who's young by head coach standards. To see that he's comfortable in his own skin, and that from day one he's not going to try and act like somebody he's not, like a 20-year veteran. I think that's been really eye-opening with him. In terms of defensive guys liking him, I mean, you know, they'll like him if he can score points. I mean, after what the Bears have been through the last couple of years, I don't think the Bears' defense is going to be picky, you know, as long as the offense can score, you know, 24, 27 a game. This isn't Lovie Smith leaving and the defensive players deciding that they hated the offensive head coach.
Well, the other thing that struck me today, just listening and watching, there is zero ego about this guy, and it was really interesting to hear him talking about almost as if it was Vic Fangio's defense. I mean, he's involved. He's the head coach. He knows that.
That's how he got him to stay.
But he's totally comfortable with this being Fangio's defense. Yeah. And it was interesting. Prince Amukamara at one point said he can get stern with you. He's not just good time Charlie up there. I mean, we're seeing a lot of this now. But he is really impressing these players, I think, with all facets of his personality and the way he wants to run this football
team. A guy who is a natural head coach. And that leadership, look, it's easy now because they haven't. There's been no crisis.
No games.
No games. There's been no adversity. And I think that's what we'll be revealing about Matt Nagy. But I think that everything that you see, it's a good predictor. He's relatable. And everybody likes a guy who is in leadership role that's relatable.
And don't you feel like after Trestman right. and Emery and it's Fox.
It's like, got a normal guy.
We got a normal guy.
We got a normal guy you can have a conversation with, right. you want to have a beer with. Hey, let's go have lunch. Somebody that you don't feel like, it doesn't go through your head when you're having the middle of conversation, like, how did you get here and why am I talking to you?
Even Lovey was that way.
Well, he also said something else today, and I wanted to scream, thank God, somebody finally said it. I guess I asked the question because we had heard that he had had a little bit of a relationship with Trubisky even after the draft, that allegedly he called him once or twice.
They would text,
And so I asked him, how is Mitch different today from the kid that you got to know through the process last year? And he went out of his way to say, well, first of all, I didn't get to know him well last year. But then he said, people need to understand, Mitch has got a lot left to prove. Mitch has got a long way to go, you know? Well, and he started to talk about some of that. And I'm thinking, thank God, somebody's good. Finally
yes.
saying this.
Yes, because it's your guy, yeah. Lewis Riddick, right, on ESPN had the quarterback confidence rankings. And what were the Bears, 26th, 25th?
Well, how about this?
That's about right.
Lewis Riddick.
That's
okay.
Says a lot about how inexperienced
he is. Lewis Riddick was on with me this morning. And I ended the interview this way. I said, Lewis, you're a new general manager. You can have one or two quarterbacks. Armed with all the knowledge that you've got today, you could pick Mitchell Trubisky and you could pick Deshaun Watson. And he said, I'll take Mitchell Trubisky.
Really?
He said, Deshaun Watson's had two ACLs. He makes a lot of plays with his legs. I'm not convinced his lower half's going to stay healthy, and I like Mitchell Trubisky.
And for all those reasons, I have no problem with his answer, but we were talking off the air. We were getting our preview magazines to bed last night, so I've been studying this stuff the last couple of days, and I kind of got stopped in my tracks. It was only seven games, but I looked at Watson's numbers next to Trubisky's numbers last year. It's not a contest. Watson blew him out. Deshaun Watson in seven games threw 19 touchdowns and seven picks. I mean, this kid had a big seven games.
He did.
He's shown a lot
Monster.
More.
And the Bears Monster. Were last in the NFL in passing yards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I as much as I respect Lewis Riddick, I don't know that I would be with him on that.
I think he is. I can't imagine many people agree with him.
I can't argue the two ACLs. I think that was
his
point.
Mitch does not have health concerns, that we're aware of, that he's had to deal with, and hopefully he won't have any of those.
Mitch has also started 25 games since high school, which probably goes a long way toward him having that healthy body.
Will Kyle Long be healthy by training camp?
Yeah, I think so. They don't seem to be
too worried about him. You say that so cavalierly, like, oh, yeah. why is it even a question?
Well, the better answer is
46 surgeries.
The
better answer is
patient.
I think he will have rehabbed these last three surgeries.
Right.
Whether he stays healthy or not. And I hope so, because I love Kyle. But it came up today, and I guess you heard some of the bites. But Nagy went out of his way to point out that both Kyle and Allen Robinson are well ahead of schedule. And you could see Kyle kind of the way he was moving around out there and kind of chomping at the bit. It looks like he hasn't looked this comfortable really in the last 2 years that we've seen.
Who's more important to the offense, Allen Robinson or Kyle Long?
Allen Robinson.
Okay.
No,
yeah.
I don't agree. I'm sorry. I'm finishing my column tonight. I don't agree. I think Kyle Long may be the biggest key to this whole thing because I think the offensive line could still be a big problem. I think they brought in some interesting weapons on offense.
Is that a Daniels guy?
Robinson is. No, I like James Daniels, but play him at his right position. Put him at center. Put Whitehair at guard. Get Kyle locked in. Then you still got question marks at tackle, left tackle. I kind of like Bobby Massey. But the only two Pro Bowlers on this team right now are Allen Robinson and Kyle Long. Your other options at receiver are more interesting, I think, than your other options on the offensive line.
Trey Burton looks like a
Jordan Howard. I left out
a wide receiver playing tight end, mm-hmm. size wise.
He is,
and he is. But
he should make plays down the field. Then
that is definitely he's not going to be used at all in the running game.
And I think when we talk about Kevin White's role, for example, the fact that he's got a guaranteed deal. He's likely to make the team. We call him whatever, third receiver, fourth receiver. Trey Burton's in line way in front of him. So, Trey Burton's
Patrick,
the
when you say
receiver.
Kevin White, my mind wanders. My attention drifts. I don't think there's any reason he's going to – how is he going to be a factor? How can you count on him?
Because he has to make the team.
How can you count on him?
Nobody's saying to count on him. I don't think anybody –
He has to make the team because of the contractual reasons?
Yeah, because they owe money.
Yeah, $5 million?
I think it's more than that, isn't it? I think that – well, the guarantee is he's got like $7 million of a dead cap hit, and they owe him most of it. I think what they're going to do with him, assuming that the speed is still there, which it was not in training camp last year before he broke his shoulder, is he's going to be a decoy to take the top off, split wide, when they've got Robinson and Gabriel running, inside and shorter routes, if you put him on the field at all.
Yeah, I still wonder if he'll be healthy enough to be on the field. I guess it's an believe it when you see it.
Well, he is right now. I mean, he looks incredible right now, so we'll see.
All right, we'll take a shot.